My brothers and sisters, it's really good to be with you. My name is Brother Angelus, good old little Rusty Montgomery. Most of you probably at least know that I'm from here. And went to Pius, went to the seminary, and discerned the Franciscan Friars of Renewal in 2009, and took final vows in 2014. So my twin brother and I, or triplet brother and I, are there. I want to beg your mercy and forgiveness. My sister just came to visit the last hour or so, and so she has little kids, and so I apologize if they interrupted your silence. I am sorry, but if they didn't come, I wouldn't get to see them very much. So I appreciate you being patient with me. So thank you. This is, this is really beautiful. I'm just really happy to escape from school. And I'm in my third year. I'll be a deacon in May. And it's just good to come home, Father. And we can continue to pray for Father Andrew. He's doing well, but it's good that he's in a nursing home now. Not forever, probably, but at least he's this little sister of the poor caring for him. And so, and he's getting better, which is good. And I saw him this past week, and he was excited I was coming. And so it's good to be home, and it's good to, at least it's a quick visit, but it's good to be with you. Father Anthony is a rock star, and so I feel completely inadequate to share in this retreat. I'm just really, really, feel really blessed just to honestly try to share in a prophetic gift and to try to just speak a word. I'm not a historian like him. I was talking to some others, like, I don't know how he takes the Old Testament and makes it, like, attractive and amazing. And it's like, who knows that stuff? And they put it all together, the history, all those things. And so he has that gift. And so I'm just sitting back there this morning. I'm like, oh, gosh, I am way out of my league. But here we are. That was an attempt to minimize expectations. But I'm just really excited to share with you a word. And we go on a hermitage every month, a little time, 2 days of prayer that we get to spend in our hermitages. We have it's like a one room little hermitage in the woods, and you have the Blessed Sacrament there, a little kitchen, a little place to sleep. And so I just recently did that, and I prayed for this retreat, and I prayed for you all, and I asked the Lord for a word, and the traditional hermit would go back to a community. He wouldn't always be by himself. And then the first question that the community would ask him would be, what is your word for us? What does the Lord want to tell us through your time in the desert? And then they would give a word that the Lord was speaking. And I just feel like the Lord has been speaking in my own heart, in my own life, and evangelizing me. And I just want to share that with you in the light of this story of Elijah, this story of a prophet who had incredible gifts, and the prophet that we look at and say, how in the world am I supposed to relate to that? How am I in the world? Am I supposed to do something like that? A little intimidating. Oftentimes we can get the same way with Our Lady. We can look at Our Lady and be like, how would I do that? How would I have that kind of faith? How would I let that kind of grace work through me and in me? But it's always important to realize that her grace is for us. And what happened in Elijah's life and the fire that burned inside of him as a prophet is for us. And again, that gift looks differently, as the prophetic gift looks different in everybody's life. But we are called to bring people back to God, to re-show them the face of God as our prophetic gifts, in particular of our baptism. Just by way of introduction, we as a community take I was telling the brothers a little bit. We do a test that tries to get at our charisms. There's different tools you can get at. There's an institute called the Siena Institute, run by Sherry Wydell. I don't know, is that a familiar name to the new evangelization? I think people might know Sherry Wydell, but she is a part of the Siena Institute, and they help people discern their gifts. They come into parishes, help parishes discern their gifts, and so the pastor can better understand how people use their gifts and how people can serve the church. Our religious community does it. So anyway, just by way of the danger of that is that I scored perfectly on administration. Got a 15. I was terrified. No one's supposed to know those things, right? Because then the community is like, oh, absolutely. Let's put him in the office. Let's do these things. And so I was running. I was like, there's got to be that's got to be a mistake. I scored 0 on work with your hands when it comes to manual labor and building things. Complete 0. So I'm not your guy. Listen, if you want to build something, I'm not your guy. I scored low on music. I can sing, but I try. try to be a part of it. And then they score, and then when you have anything above 12, then these aren't, our charisms aren't meant to put us in a box or limit us. They're just to say, this is what's working in my life, and these are the things I should consider and pray about. So anyway, anywhere from manual work with the poor, or not with the poor, with your hands, to administration, I'm somewhere in between. So I shouldn't have told the head of the community about some of those things, because then I'll be stuck in an office my whole life, which is nothing I want. One of the words that the Lord's been sharing with me in my own heart, in my own life recently, is thinking about his providence and thinking about his care in my own life and how he cares for me. And we talk about God's will so much. What is God's will? Am I following God's will? I don't know if any of us know what that really means. But we use the terms. And so we try to experience his providence in our life. We try to experience him being more aware of how he works and what he does and what he wants me to do. Big things and small things, you know, big vocations. Am I called to religious life? Am I called to get married? And, you know, so we have ask those big questions, and then we ask the small things. Lord, how are you moving? What are you doing? How do you want me to respond in this particular situation or this particular relationship, whatever it might be? And I think, brothers and sisters, by way of just setting a context for what we want to talk about with Elijah this afternoon, is I am oftentimes a victim of God's will. I turn into a victim. I don't see it as him caring for me. I see it as him imposing something on me and me having to kind of like squirm and respond, okay, Lord, I guess. I don't receive God's will and God's providence in my life as a blessing. I receive it in the spirit of being a victim. And I always think about in this dynamic of God's will, I think about that in the Gospel of John, where Jesus says, they didn't take my life from me. I laid it down. They didn't take it. I wasn't a victim. I gave it to them. I was telling some of you, I'm in a class on how to give good homilies right now. And Father Peter Cameron, I don't know if anybody knows Father Peter Cameron or have heard of it. He's the editor of the Magnificat, and he teaches at the seminary, and he's just a fascinating guy and someone who I'm really moved by, and he's a really, really amazing teacher and a priest. He came in the other day, and he studied playwriting and music, movie directing and things, which is beautiful. As gifts as a priest, it's really powerful. So he writes plays and is a part of directing movies and things. And he presented this theory, and I want to connect it to this notion of being a victim, choosing to experience God and his providence as a victim or as a blessing. He said that there's a theory, and it might be a little outdated, so the time might be different, but nonetheless, that there's a theory in script writing and movie making called the 27th minute theory. And we looked at it. It's funny. All the brothers went and looked it up. There is something that needs to happen in the 25th to the 30th minute in a movie that hooks the audience, that gets them to want to be invested and be able to make a choice to say, I'm in for the rest of the movie. You got me. People don't walk out after the second hour of the movie, usually. They walk out in the first half hour, if they walk out. And they make a judgment about the movie, whether it's good or bad, in the first half hour. Probably a little earlier, but just for the sake of this theory. So if you think about it, and he challenged us, and again, with today's culture, it could be a little earlier, but there's always going to be a point where, you know, for us youngins, we probably need it at something like the 6th minute, something that needs to catch us. But anyway, in the 27th minute in The Gladiator, I don't know if most of you have seen The Gladiator, the main character goes to Rome to approach or to confront the man who took his family. And the music matches the scene. He's in this herd of people that goes to Rome, and he makes a decision. And this decision, they say, the movie makers say, that the character makes a decision that he can't go back now. They can't turn around. And that's part of the emotion for watching it as us. Like, he's made a decision that he has to go forward, and we're with him. He used the example of the Godfather. In the first Godfather, Michael is in the hospital, and they try to go and assassinate his dad. And there's music. Again, everything kind of matches it. But there's a moment where he decides that he can't go back and that he has to move forward. I wish I had more life-giving movies to talk about and give you examples of. I just watched Remember the Titans. That came up. And that's more of a life-giving movie. At that time frame, 25 to 30 minutes, is when they have the football camp at Gettysburg. And they make a choice as a team not to go back. They make a choice as a team to come together, both black and white, African-American, and they make a choice that we're going to play together as a team. And as the audience member, you're like, I'm with you. I'm in. So it's beautiful. You see the main characters in these movies making a choice. And something changes. And it's like kind of like they submit their will to what they have to do to what is to come. My brothers and sisters, have we really made that choice? We go through God's will every day. We experience his care for us in providence every day. But are we still victims to his will? Or do we make the choice with all of our freedom to say yes to him and to offer ourselves to him and not just be kind of like a mere recipient of his will, but be actively engaged in it? I think that's the transition. Everybody hates transitions, and I sometimes feel like life's a transition because we know who we are and we know who we need to be. But that transition of the will, that transition of having our own 27th minute, having our own moment in our lives. Lord, I don't know what is going to happen. I don't know what your will for me is in the future. I don't know how daily you're going to take care of me with the many faces and the many circumstances that reveal your love to me, reveal your care for me. But I want you to know I'm in. The Lord wants this from us. And you guys are on retreat, and you've made this time, and you've consecrated this time to him, and you've set out your own lives, out of your own lives, out of your daily schedules. And so I'm not going to be surprised if some of you are there already, that you've already made that major choice and thrust for following his will and not being a victim. But some of you might need, including myself, might need some space to evaluate, to consider how we receive God's will, how we receive his providence. And again, big picture, small picture, big picture, big things that happen in our life, but the daily, minute by minute, moment by moment, do we receive God's will as a blessing, as something where he truly reveals himself? He reveals his face. He reveals his care. Or do we receive it again with angst and a roll of our eyes? Oftentimes the tough things, oftentimes the challenging things, oftentimes the things we don't have control over, whatever they might be. How do we receive God's will? That's the first question, the first consideration, the first notion that I just would like to propose for you today. Because oftentimes the scripture verse that I pray every day when I get up is, Lord, help me to know that you're for me today. Because when we're victims, we don't really believe and aren't really certain that God is for me, that God is for us. The grace I beg for every day, Lord, help me to know that you're for me. Because when we receive that posture and we just know that everything that happens is the Lord caring for me, everything that happens is the Lord in a powerful, beautiful, loving way providing for me, and then we should be like excited little kids. Hey, I wonder what he's going to do next. It's kind of like I could see one of the brothers worked out this beautiful image when he did Lectio and he shared it with the community. When the feeding of the 5,000, the disciples, imagine what they would have been like when Jesus says, let's have everybody sit together. We're going to give them food. And then imagine the disciples saying to the strangers there, you're going to want to see this. You're going to want to, this is the time to pay attention because he's going to do something. They saw that look in Jesus' eyes. They knew something was going to happen. If we don't really believe Jesus for us, it's just kind of like, all right, I guess we're going to have dinner. All right, yeah, let's pass some things around. Anybody have a sandwich? Anybody? Instead of saying, listen, I'm certain of his goodness. I'm certain of his love. I'm certain of his care. And I'm certain that he wants me to experience life as a blessing. And as we'll see later on, as a prophet does, and as someone who follows Jesus and someone who's a disciple of Jesus, not only to experience him as a blessing, but then to be a blessing to others. If we don't experience God's will as a blessing, how do you expect to be a blessing to your kids? How do you expect to be a blessing to your brothers? How do you expect to be a blessing to your fellow coworkers? How does Elijah, when he stands before King Ahab with the power of God, who is given power over the drought, that is his mission. You have power over the drought. If he doesn't receive that, which we're going to see in a second, as a blessing, but he receives it as a victim, how in the world does he expect to be used to lead people back to the Father? How in the world does he expect to be used to help bring salvation to his people and in our circumstances, to your family, to your spouse, to your friends, at work? My brothers and sisters, this is vital. This is vital that we get this right. Because in this transition, and speaking about charisms, speaking about gifts, speaking about how the Lord wants to use you personally, how he created you, and he's providing for you, and he's preparing you and giving you to do something beautiful in your life and beautiful in church and beautiful in our world today. Part of this transition is, yes, being excited about the gift. And I'm sure most of you probably know or are aware of what gifts you have, how the Lord uses you. What gifts do you use that you could keep using all day? What gift do you use that you don't get tired? What gift do you secretly hope that people ask you to be a part of? What gift do you use that you, it's almost like you're walking on air, that you just get excited to go and serve, excited to go and do this, excited to go and be a part of something? What is it that brings you to life? That's what gift the Lord wants to use. And he wants to be specific, and he wants to be intimate, and he wants to be personal. What helps us mature in our lives, and something that I experience, and something that, especially when you're professional and you do this for a living, and Father, this is right out of Father Andrew's book. He'd be so proud. I learned this from him. The transition that we need to make from being victims of God's will to being blessed by his will, to transition that we need to make to Lord, what are my gifts and how can I serve you and be a blessing to others, is that we constantly have to be aware that the gift is God himself. We constantly have to be aware that I'm not called to consume the gift. I'm called to use the gift, and then when using the gift, be mindful of the one who gives it. And that's what we're going to see in a second. Elijah gets into trouble. He's given great power. And then throughout the story, he starts to feel sorry for himself and he starts to have a pity party. I'm really good at throwing pity parties. I'm like a pity party planner. It's the same thing. Because when the gift is not used correctly, or when the gift doesn't show up to my expectations, and when the gift this and the gift that, I get down. When I don't see the gift and experience the gift as a gift and a blessing, but actually as a victim, I get sad. I get disappointed. Then I get angry. And then I turn in on myself. And then it goes down and on a dark path that my brothers and sisters, we don't have a luxury to go down because it's a dark place. I do work at a prison, and it's been one of the greatest blessings of my religious life. It's a tough place in New York City to be in a prison. And I go home after spending the day with these guys. It's an impossible situation. I work with guys in addiction in prison. It's like a double prison. They're chained to the addiction, and then they're locked up. And they're all in their late teens, early 20s. Makes me feel old. And I go before the Lord. And I say, Lord, what are you doing? And I then start to tell him what I think should happen. And I start to feel sorry for myself. Lord, I can't do this. There's nothing we can do. Why aren't you doing more? Three of my guys in the last 6 months have overdosed on heroin and one has passed away. I look at the tab and I'm like, Lord, what do you want me to do? I can't take it away. I can't fix it. But I feel sorry for myself because I think it's up to me. And I feel sorry for myself because it's not going to the expectation that I thought it should. I think everybody should be healed, Lord, and be completely on fire for you. And they shouldn't have any problems in their family life. They shouldn't have any problems in their personal life. They shouldn't have any addictions, and everything should be fine. And the Lord's like, just to tell you a quick story, the other day, there's this one kid who's really in a tough spot. I don't even know his name until the other day. And he shared one day when I was there just observing, and he talked about how he doesn't care about his addiction, and he can't wait to get out and just go and party again. He's 28. And so I started to pray for him. And he was supposed to get out of prison. The next week, he was there. And I thought he was supposed to be gone. So, of course, I went right up to him and said, I thought you were supposed to be gone. And I said, I've been praying for you. And he said, can I talk to you afterwards? And I said, yes. And I gave a little teaching. He comes up to me and says, I was supposed to be gone, but they misplaced my paperwork, and I got an extra 12 days. And he said, I was so angry and so upset, I went back to my cell. And he said, it was on the Feast of the Conversion of St. Paul. And he said, I experienced a grace and a light in my cell by myself that I've never experienced before. And I knew it was God. I started to read the scriptures. And he said, I don't want to drink. It makes my life miserable. He said, I grew up Catholic. I don't know what it means. I don't know how to do it. I don't know what to do. But I just know I don't want that. I walked away with tears in my eyes, and the Lord said in my heart, I got this. I received in that moment the blessing of his will. Not being a victim of his will, not being a victim of his providence, not being a victim of how things happen in life. I was living as a victim because I was trying to control everything. I didn't receive it, controlled it. God's saying, it's not only about the gift. It's me. Elijah's not only receiving prophetic gifts for his people, but he's receiving God. Ultimately, and first and foremost, God is giving him the gift of himself. And then he's asking Elijah to go and share that. He's not asking Elijah to share what he thinks God is, the way he best thinks everybody should live. Elijah is making this transition from gift to giver. And I'm making this transition in my own life. And my proposal for you all today is, as we make the transition from victim to blessing, how can we make the transition? And we know a part of that transition is to consider, what do I really want? Do I just really want the gifts? Do I just really want the grace? Or do I want to be in a relationship with the one who gives it? And we can consider that and pray about that for numerous retreats. At the 27th minute for you, the Lord is asking you to make a choice, just like the characters have to make a choice and to not go back. It's like they can't go back after this. Elijah has now made a choice. He stands before the Lord. As the Lord of God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, there shall be neither dew nor rain these years except by my word. He receives his mission and stands in it. And what does God do? Because this is what he wants to do with us. And the word of the Lord came to him, depart from here, and turn eastward, and hide yourself at the brook Cherith, that is east of the Jordan. This is 1 Kings 17. Depart from here and turn eastward and hide yourself by the brook Cherith, that is east of the Jordan. You shall drink from the brook, and I have commanded that ravens feed you there. So we went and did this according to the word of the Lord. He went and dwelt by the brook Cherith, that is, the east of the Jordan. And the ravens brought him bread and meat in the morning and bread and meat in the evening, and he drank from the brook. And after a while, the brook dried up because there was no rain in the land. Part of this transition is being led to a place that's not really comfortable. It's kind of like, again, 27th minute, the Lord's like saying, let's get to work. It's kind of like the Rocky movie. I don't know the 27th minute of the Rocky movie, but when the music starts and he starts to train, he actually decides to fight, right? And he's ready to train. Eye of a Tiger comes on and they start to train. It's kind of like Elijah's being taken. He's been given this mission and he's made a choice. I stand before the Lord. And you'd hope, or you'd think, in our own little limited way of thinking, that he would be going, and now he would go, what Father Anthony's going to talk about tonight, he would go to Carmel and he would do his thing. Now the Lord does something different. The Lord takes him to a brook out in the desert. I was there over Christmas. I was in the Holy Land last month, and it was just really beautiful because these words and these places mean something to have been there. Elijah, this story actually happens in Jordan, and so we didn't get to go over we tried to limit the crossing of borders that we did. So we didn't, weren't at these specific places, but at least we saw them from a distance. So it just gives a beautiful image. The word for Cherith in Hebrew means a place of cutting off. It's the same word for divorce in Hebrew. It gives you an image for divorce, which is terrifying. Cutting off. So the Lord led him to a place to lead him through a process of cutting off, cutting out. Not very fun, I don't think. And for Elijah, we're going to see, as the story unfolds, a little disappointing. Because he was excited. He was ready to go. It's kind of like going to novitiate. You join the community and then you have to go to postulants and novitiate. And you're like, this is not as exciting or as fun as I thought it was going to be. When are we going to get out? When are we going to serve the poor? When are we going to like go travel and do all these things? To a place where he gives us an invitation to go through a conversion, to let go, to cut out things in our lives. From victim to blessing, from gift to giver. What's in the middle? The Cherith, the brook, where God says, I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to have ravens feed you, and you're going to be able to sit by this brook and be able to receive water from it, which is just interesting. Because the Lord's saying this, and Elijah knows, that's nice, but we're in a drought. It sounds good. Yeah, I got this. You're going to do this. And, you know, by the way, ravens aren't birds that share. So that's also ironic. Ravens consume. They hover over and they consume. And the Old Testament, not interpreters, commentators, will say that Elijah sat by the brook and every day, less and less water was flowing through it. It's kind of like his life was becoming a drought in reality, and every day, less and less water. The Lord wants us to rely on him. He wants us to trust in his providence. He wants us to let go of our own sense and need and demands to provide for ourselves. And he's going to do crazy things, ironic things, surprising things to interrupt our lives to say, yeah, I'm going to use a raven to feed you. Yeah, I'm going to give you something to drink with a brook that's drying up. And Elijah has this experience that we will have, and that I hope we do have, but we will have in a more intense way, in a more beautiful way as we make this transition, that every time we're fed, we're reminded of the giver. Could you imagine the experience he has? Every time a raven comes, that's completely crazy. He laughs. It's God doing his thing. You're going to want to pay attention. It's like someone was out there with him. They're in about 10 minutes, there's going to be a raven that comes that's going to give me everything I need to eat today. Seeing God's will is a blessing. Seeing God's providence and care for me is a blessing. Not to say, there's no way. And not to complain. There's a drought. The brook is going, and then, there's no way this is going to last. And ravens, I don't want to eat that. It's a dirty bird. Victim. Can we do it another way, Lord? You just had manna appear to Moses and the Israelites. Can we just kind of do that? Can I just wake up one morning and it just kind of be there? Do I really have to receive it from these birds? Victim. What does the Lord want to cut out of your life? If the Lord wants to use you as a prophet to turn his people back to him, to turn your kids back to him, or your new kids to him, to turn your people, to turn the poor, to turn people, strangers we encounter in the airport, whatever it might be, what do we need to cut out of our lives so that can happen? I went on we don't have TV, we don't have internet at our house, but we still have the opportunity at the school to kind of be consumed by that stuff. I went on an election fast about halfway through the election. I was just done with it. Trying to make a little space. Do we need to go on a Fox News fast? Do we need to go on a radio fast? Do we need to go on a Facebook fast? What kind of fast, what kind of cutting out does the Lord need to do? Like he wanted to do in the life of Elijah. Again, he just didn't go right into his mission. The Lord took him out into the desert to a place of cutting away, wanted to provide for him, wanted to create some space. Here's another word. Wanted Elijah to learn to be more available to him. How available am I, to God's providence, to God's care and work in my life? Favorite word. What is prayer? Being available to God. Prayer is God's work. The mystics got it. It is interceding. It is saying words. It is saying the rosary. But more than anything, it's allowing ourselves to be before God, to be available to him. Elijah has this opportunity in this place of cutting away, out in the desert, to be available. This retreat, to be available. What a beautiful gift. But this posture that the Lord wants to give us is not just a retreat once a year or just not on Sundays, maybe when we say take some time. How can we live a posture that is available? Elijah has some big things coming up. Some pretty intense encounters with those who worship other gods. And God needs him to be available. So in our evaluation and our examine today, spend some quiet time. What does the Lord want to cut out of my life? We got to be uncompromising with this, my brothers and sisters. The choice that the Lord wants us to make, the 27th minute, our 27th minute, he needs it for his church. He needs it for his people. So we have to go and experience this desert. And we have to experience this cutting away. And we have to experience his care for us and his providence for us. And we have to experience the certainty that he's for us. Sometimes I always joke, sometimes I get up in the morning and just because of, you know, kind of the challenges of life and the wounds of the past, whatever it might be, it's like I get up every morning and the posture I start with is, all right, Lord, how are you going to take it to me today? Not how are you going to bless me? What's going to go wrong today, Lord? How, what, you know, and I have this thinking that I know we all do. How am I going to fall? I can't wait, Lord, today to see how much I'm going to fall short. I can't wait to see today, Lord, to see how much your will is going to disappoint me. We all do it in our own way. The grace of asking for the certainty that God is for us. Not against us. Elijah experiences this cutting away. And when the brook was dried up, and after a while the brook dried up, and because there was no rain in the land, the word then came to Elijah, "Go, arise and go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon, and dwell there." Sidon is Jezebel's people. That was supposed to be an impressive, like, trivia right there that Father Anthony would generally say that. You impressed? Sidon is Jezebel's people. So he's in this raw state, Elijah, been going through a lot, dealing with a lot, things have been cut out in the desert. And the Lord tells him, I want you to go into the heart of the beast. Preparing him. And I have commanded a widow there to feed you. So he arose and went to Zarephath. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called her and said to her, bring me a little water in a vessel. And I want to invite you to read the rest of the story because the story is too long to actually, it would be another talk. But I want to tell you this. Elijah's obedient and experiences God's care for him. And then he blesses the widow. To the extent that the son of the widow even dies. And the widow becomes a victim. How could you? After I fed you, she ends up feeding Elijah. They end up being provided for. And the widow becomes a victim and says, how could you? And Elijah brings her son back. Leads her son back. And her back. To the father. Turns their hearts back to them. Elijah becomes a blessing. Only because he entered in through this desert, only because he had to have things cut away, and in that cutting way, God revealed himself in a beautiful way. We don't get the account of that, but if you experience what's going on, like we experience God's care of providing through the raven and through the dried up brook, we know that God is for us and we know that he cares for us. Imagine, it says that Father Anthony could tell you, he was most likely with the widow for two and a half or three years, hiding out. And in chapter 18, they talk about a man, they put a search out for him, and he's hiding out in Sidon, in the heart. It's like Father Anthony said, it's like the FBI putting a search out for you, and you're asked, the Lord tells you to go to Washington, D.C. and hide out. National manhunt, international manhunt out for Elijah, and he's sitting to the heart of the beast. Imagine what he experienced. When he wrote, it's the first recorded experience in the Old Testament obviously a prefiguration of Jesus raising Lazarus from the dead, that someone's risen from the dead. The boy was dead. And Elijah prayed over him, and it's a beautiful prayer. Give him his soul back. That is almost what Elijah received, right? In the desert. Give him his soul back. From victim to blessing. From gift to giver of the gift. We're let out into the desert with Elijah. And again, a desert might be a retreat. A desert might be the actual state in life that we're in. And the Lord works, and the Lord cuts away, and the Lord provides in crazy ways. And then we're given a mission. And this, if you know the story, and we'll talk more about it tonight, but we're given the first part of the mission, and then he goes on. And you'll see it, the cycle with Elisha. Then he falls back into being a victim. What does he go into the desert? And we're going to talk about it later, but he goes in the desert, and what does he pray for? Death. Father Anthony even goes as far as saying that Elijah wants to commit suicide. He prays for death. He wants to die. Back in victim mode. And what does the Lord do? He reveals himself in a powerful way. And reminds Elijah who he is, that he's for him, that he cares for him, that he provides for him. And he reminds Elijah, it's not just about the gift. It's about the giver of the gift. It's about me. Then Elijah goes on and continues to work, and we're going to talk about that. As we take this time, my brothers and sisters, where are you at in your experience of God's providence in your life? Where are you at in your care for him? Or his experience in your care for his care for us, excuse me. Maybe you've made the choice. Maybe you're not turning back. Maybe you've had your 27th minute, and maybe you're in a place where you're like, yeah, I'm ready for the desert. I've experienced the desert. Maybe you've been to the desert and you're terrified and you leave, which Elijah tries to do. Wherever we're at, the transition is the invitation. Whatever we're experiencing, if you come, maybe you come disappointed today, this weekend. Maybe you come in a good place. Maybe you're on a you're in a good spot with your family, with your spouse. Maybe you're tired, exhausted. Maybe you're anxious, worried about what's to come, providing. Worried about our church. Worried about our country. Maybe your kid, maybe you have adult kids and they're away from the church. Maybe you have little kids and it's just hard to teach them the faith and pass it on. Maybe your parish is in a tough spot. You don't know what to do and you want to help the pastor, but you just don't know how to do it. This transition has to be made. The Lord wants us to give, he wants to give us the grace to live from a constant posture of certainty of his care for us and his love for us. And he wants to speak to our heart every day to tell us he's for us. And he wants to experience us to experience his love and his providence and the people he brings into our life as a blessing. And so if we feel like we're victims, if we feel like we live out of that posture, which is most of the time the battle that I fight, not to live as a victim. Let's ask the Lord today to help us to rework that, to kind of rewire that, to cut it out. Let's ask the Lord for a powerful grace to make the transition, where we can start to see not only the gifts that he gives us and the gifts he wants to use in us, but that we just know that he wants to give us the gift of himself, the power of his love and mercy in our life. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid to live there. And it might take a while. It might seem like a constant state. It might seem like a constant cutting out. But when we know the cutting's happening and we know the pain's happening, let's be excited, like the disciples, and say, okay, the Lord's going to do something. And what he does with Elijah, we'll see, but it's pretty incredible. Brings a lot of people back to the Lord, as a prophet does. And the Lord wants to do that. And so we can look forward to what, if we're suffering and experiencing cutting away and experiencing the transition again, which no one likes, let's be already grateful to what the Lord's doing and what he wants to do in our own lives and the lives of those that we have, that we care about, those the lives that we care for, and how he wants to use you and us in the church. Let's beg for that grace and ask Our Lady to walk with us, to care for us, that we might make the choice and not be afraid of the cutting. Lord Jesus, we come before you and we're grateful and we're thankful for this retreat. We're grateful for what we are experiencing, Lord, as your providence and your care right now. Lord, I just ask that you send your Spirit upon my dear brothers and sisters here to receive a word from you this weekend, to receive a grace from you, to be certain of your care and your love, and that we might, Lord, continue to be reminded that you're for us. And we might receive and experience the gift of your providence and care in our life as a blessing. Lord, we give you the parts of us that are victims. We give you the parts of us that are anxious or afraid. And we long, Lord Jesus, to receive that consoling word, to receive the bread from heaven that will fulfill us, that will sustain us, and that will lead us, Lord. All glory be to the Father, and to the Son, and to the Holy Spirit. As it was in the beginning, is now, ever shall be, world without end. Amen.